We're holding on Chof Omid Beis, the second line of the wide lines. We learned in the Mishnah, we were talking about various cases where you find a person finds a shtar among his shtaros, etc. And we said in the Mishnah, im yeshimon simponos, that if together with his shtaros, he finds simponos, which we said yesterday that a simpon is another name for a shover, for a receipt showing that the debt has been paid. And Tosfos points out that it's called a shover when the loiva has it and a simpon when the malva has it. So we said, if there are simponos, yasa masha ba simponos, then he should do what it says in the simponos, meaning, in other words, in the previous case in the Mishnah, we said a person finds a shtar among his other shtaris and he doesn't know what the deal with it is, as it actually says. For example, he's a sholish, he's a third party that one of them, the malva or the loiva, had entrusted him with the shtar, and now he's forgotten which one entrusted him with it, which means, in other words, is it paid off or not? So then we said it has to be left on Shiyav Eliyahu, but a different case would be that if a person finds among his shtaris a shover, yasa masha basimpo, and then he follows what it says in the simpo, meaning whichever shtar it refers to is bechezkas, that it's paid off. And as we said in the Mishnah, as Rashi learned, even though you would expect the shover to be in the hands of the loiva, nevertheless, we can assume in this case that the loiva trusted him and told him, you'll give me the shover later, and he didn't. And right now, therefore, we find it. Therefore, it's in the malva's hands, and therefore he finds it among his files. So the Gemara says, Omer Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba, Omer Rav. So Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba says a din in the name of Rav, which on the face of it contradicts it. And then the Gemara is going to bring on Mishnah to figure out then what's going on. But Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba says, simpon hayotze mitachas yidei malva. A general rule is when you find a simpon that's in the hands of the malva. So again, the malva is looking through his files and he finds a simpon. Even if it's written in the malva's own handwriting, so really we don't say that it's a valid simpon, and therefore that demonstrates that the shtar that it refers to has actually been paid off. No, we say it's only like a almost like a joke, and therefore it's possible, meaning in other words that the malva is still perfectly able to collect on the original shtar as if there was no simpon at all. There are nuances that Mefoshim talk about. The Ritva makes the point, in other words, that like this, the Gemara is going to point out why it's not valid. But still, you would think that it still shows something. Maybe at least he wrote in his own handwriting, so maybe it should be considered a hadah. So Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba says that no, for reasons that the Gemara is now going to explain. So loymi boya kosav ksav yad sofer. Needless to say, if the shover, the stimpon, is written in the handwriting of a sofer, you can say it doesn't show that the debt has actually been paid. The ikla memo, you could say, you know why the malva has the stimpon. Safri sramaleva kosav. It so happened that a sofer came by and the malva grabbed the opportunity to have the shover written, figuring that this way in the future, when the loiva comes to pay, he doesn't want that. If he doesn't have a shover, then the loiva might say, well, then I'm not going to pay you back until you have me a shover, and then I have to go find the sofer. So right now, there happens to be a sofer around. Let me have a shover written out, and I'll hold it on, and I'll hold on to it until I need it. Rashi points out also that the malva may figure to himself, the loiva may give me back the money when I don't have the shtar choiv itself with me. He has the shtar chayv itself with him, then we don't need a simpon, we don't need a shover, then he'll just give him back the shtar chayv and the loiva will rip it up. But the malva may think to himself, look, you know, this debt is outstanding, I want to be able to collect it as soon as possible. So the loiva may come and pay me at a time when I don't happen to have the actual shtar itself with me. So now that the sofer is available, let me have him write a shover and I'll hold on to it. So therefore, we can't say that the existence of the shover demonstrates that the loan has been paid off. But also, even if it's written in his own handwriting, possible, then it would still be possible, even when you don't have that business about that a sofer may have come by, because it may happen that the guy shows up to pay the debt. Bein Hashemoshes, right before Shabbos begins, the kapara li, and he's going to pay me then. The ilo yahiv nalei, and again, if I don't give him a shover, lo yahiv li zuzi, he won't give me the money. And then after Shabbos, you never know, something else might come up or whatever, and I may never have a chance to collect the debt, or at least not as easily. Therefore, so he thinks to himself, let me write a shover in advance. That way, when he brings me the money, then I'll be able to give him the shover right there on the spot. And again, the idea being, what if I don't have the shtar itself available at that time? I may have the shtar deposited by a sholish for safekeeping. I may have it someplace else, whatever. So like this, he figures a shover is a good thing to have around. So that's why Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba says that even if it's in the Malva's own handwriting, then it doesn't demonstrate the debt has been paid off, and therefore that the shtar still has its original validity, and you can collect it.
Now, you would expect the shover to have a date.
Does a shover have a date? It may. It may not. The pashtus wouldn't really matter. Even if it was predated, it wouldn't hurt anything. A shtar chayv itself that's predated, you have a problem that he's going to collect inappropriately from the chosim shabbatim, as we've been learning throughout this last half of the parak. Shover of a pashtus, you don't have that. But I don't know if a shover has to have a date. It's a good point. In any case, maybe what he'll think is, you know, I'll have the shover written and I'll fill in the date when it comes. Well, the Gemara says Tanan, but let's look at our Mishnah. We said him Yesh Imon Simponus, Yasim Asher Simponus. Here the Mishnah said that if you find a Simpon together with Yeshtoris, then you should follow what the Simpon says, which means that a shover that's in the, and again, the word Simpon means that it's in the Malva's possession, and we say you should follow what it says in the Simpon, and whichever shtar it refers to is considered paid off. So that contradicts what Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba is saying. The answer is no. Kidomer of Safra Shanimtsa ben Shtoris Kruin, just like we have in a few lines where Safra says in a different context that the case is talking about that he found it among his Shtoris that are ripped up. The word Kruin over here, the Marshal, by the way, changes the word Kruin to Pruin, which means paid off, but it amounts to the same thing. Once a Shtar is paid off, it's ripped up usually. Anyway, the point is, in other words, that. So here you find, Rashi gives two explanations which affect a lot of the flow of the Gemara over the next few lines and affect a lot of different areas of the halacha of these matters of shtoris that you find where you don't know exactly what the story of them is. Or where you have a suffix whether you can collect with a certain shtar or something. So Rashi's first explanation is that the shtar that the shover refers to is among his shtaris kruim. So in other words, like this, he has a bunch of other shtaris. He has, over time, his shtaris have been paid off, and therefore they're ripped up. Now, in that file, together with those shtaris kruim, he finds one shtar, which is still intact. So you would think, well, it's intact, but therefore it's still outstanding, obviously. But now we find a shover on it. So now the fact that the one intact shtar is among all the ripped up shtaris shows that this shover must actually be true and that in fact the debt was paid off. In other words, Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba is telling us that just the existence of a shover doesn't show that anything was paid. Because like we said, he may have had it pre-written to be available for when he needs it. But now that in addition, the shtar that you find that shover referring to is itself among the shtaris kruin, then that gives us a stronger reason to say that in fact the debt has been paid off, and for whatever reason, this shtar, unlike all the others, was not ripped off. It was not ripped up. So why is the shover? Why is the shover in the hands of the malva? Okay, because the loiva forgot it. So that's one explanation. Then Rashi's second explanation is that the shover itself is found among the shtaris kruin, the shover itself is found among the shtaris kruin. So therefore, again, that means that the debt has probably been paid off. The first explanation, Rashi says, kach shamaiti. This is what I heard from my rabbeim. Rashi himself prefers the second explanation, that it's not a matter of where the shtar that it refers to is found. It's a matter of where the shover itself is found, that it's found among his ripped up documents. And again, the Ritvan, a number of other Rishonim discuss different nafkaminas of those two explanations that affect several of the other cases that the Gemara is going to mention in the next few lines. Anyway, the point is, so you have both. So you have, there are times when a simpo, and even when it's biyad malve, is considered significant. When, as we said, it, meaning either the original shtar or the shover, according to Rashi's two explanations, is found among shtoris kruin. And then on the other hand, you have Rabbi Yirmiyahu ba'Abba's din, when you don't find anything among shtoris kruin, and then we said the existence of the shover doesn't show that anything was paid off. So the same way as Reb Safra says that in that other case, Hochanami, the same thing over here, Shemotzim and Shtoris Kruin, you're talking about that he found it, the original Shtar, or the Shover, as the case may be, among the Shtoris Kruin. Okay, the Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring a proof against Reb Yirmiyahu ba'Abba from another Mishnah in Bava Basra. The Mishnah says, Nimtza la'echa ben Shtoroysav, Shtorosho Yosef ben Shimon Perua, if a person finds among his Shtoris, he has a shover that says that the shtar of Yosef ben Shimon, where previously Yosef ben Shimon borrowed money from me, and now his shtar is porua, is paid off, then the din is shtaris shneim pruin. Now if there are two Yosef ben Shimons in that town, and again, Yosef ben Shimon is just an example that we're using as a typical Jewish name, although as we talked about the other day, the vort from Reb Tzadik HaKoyen of Lublin, why indeed the Gemara uses that particular combination. But anyway, the point is that, so here you have, we talked about a few days ago, the case where we don't know of two Yosef ben Shimons in town. Here we're talking about, we know, the Mishnah describes over there several details that come out in the case, where you have several dinim that come out in the case, where there are two Yosef ben Shimons known in town. So one of them is now that if a person has a shover that says that the shtar of Yosef ben Shimon is paid off, then if he has in his possession debts, if he has in his possession shtari choiv, that both Yosef ben Shimon's owe him money, and the shover doesn't clarify which one, then the din is both of them are considered paid off, because each one that he goes to pay it off, then that shover is available to show that it was paid off, and therefore he wouldn't be able to prove that which one is paid off. So again, the question is that we see that even though the shover is in the hands of the malva, nimtza ben shtoroysav, nevertheless we say it's valid, not like Rabbi Yirmiyahu ba'Abba says. Rashi, by the way, refers to the Gemara over there in Bava Basra, asks, never mind the shover, even without a shover, how would he be able to collect from either one of them? Each one that he comes to collect from is going to say it's the other Yosef ben Shimon that owes you money. So Rashi brings from the Gemara over there, what happens is, in a case like that, when you have two people of the same name in town, what you have to do is, when you're writing a shtar involving any of them, you have to be mashalish. You add the third generation. So you're right, Yosef ben Shimon ben Avraham, or Yosef ben Shimon ben Yitzchak, as the case may be. So now the case is, the original shtaris that they refer to do correctly say that Yosef ben Shimon ben Avraham and Yosef ben Shimon ben Yitzchak, as the case may be. So now when he goes to collect from one of them, then all we have to do is look at the shtar and see which one's grandfather is written over there. The case would be over here, Rashi explains, that the shover, though, does not have that. The shover just has Yosef ben Shimon. So now the result of that is that because of that shover, then we're saying he can't collect from either one, because the shover shows the debt has been paid. But again, the question is, according to Yirmiyahu ba'Abba, why? If the shover is in the hands of the malva, then it means that it means that nothing's been paid off yet, because it just means the malva had it pre-written. And again, the answer is, again, just like Reb Safra says in another case that the Gemara is going to quote soon, that we're talking about, he found it among the shtoris kruin, then he also, hochanami shenimtza ben shtoris kruin, the same thing over here, we're talking about that the original shtar of Yosef ben Shimon, or both of them, actually, we'd have to say, or the shover, according to Rashi's two explanations, is found among the shtoris kruin. The Ritva says just that. According to Rashi's first explanation, you'd have to say that both Yosef ben Shimon's shtoris are found among the shtoris kruin. And therefore, we can't be sure which one the shover refers to. So Rashi says nimtza ben shtaroysav, he finds among his shtaris, he finds the shtar, but it means not just Rashi says nimtza shtar ben shtaris pruin, but according to Rashi's first explanation, it would actually mean that not just the shtar, but the shtarois, both are the ones that Yosef ben Shimon owes him money. Toshma, let's bring another proof from a Mishnah describes in Masechta Shavuos. You have a case where Yisoymim are collecting from Yisoymim. So Reuven had owed money to Shimon. Both Reuven and Shimon have since passed away. Now you have Shimon's Yoshim are coming to collect from Reuven's Yoshim. So therefore, in order to do that, they have to take a Shavua. And the Shavua is Shaloip Kadonu Abba. The Shavua is that our father did not give us instructions before he passed away to tell us that this debt was paid off. And that our father never told us previously back when he was healthy that this was paid off. And that we didn't find any documents among our father's documents that shows that this one is paid off. So because if any of those things happen, then of course they can't collect on the debt. So they have to be able to take a shavua on those three details. The point is, and if they found something in their father's papers that said that was paid off, then we said it was. Then we would say it is paid off. But again, according to the Yumi Ababa, it wouldn't necessarily, because it just means that he had the shavua written out in advance. And here's the original case where Omer of Safra, Shinimtsaben, Shtoris Kruin, that we're talking about over there, that you find it, meaning the original shtar or the shover, among the shtaris kruin, and they are also, and Rabbi Yumiya would agree again, as we said, that the shover is fine in that case, because the fact that you find the original shtar among the shtaris kruin, or the fact that you find the shover among the shtaris kruin, shows that in fact the debt has in fact been paid off. But so when they're swearing, what they'd be swearing to the Yosomim is the Yoshim is that they didn't find this shover among the, or that they didn't find the original shtar or the shover, as the case may be, among their father's shtaris kruin, and therefore that shows. But rather, they found it someplace else in his files. Whereas if they found one, it's someplace else in his files among the shtaris that he has yet to use, for example, which according to the Yumi Ababa might in fact be the case. He hasn't in fact used that shover yet because he had it written in advance. Okay, the Gemara says Toshma. Let's bring another proof. A Braisa says Simpon Sheyesh Olav Edim. When you have a Simpon that has Edim signed on it, Yiskayim B'Choismav. And here the Malva is claiming that even though the Shover is written, the debt has not been paid off yet. Well, what you have to do, Yiskayim B'Choismav, you have to go and have, you have to do the regular Kiyum Shtaris. Have the Edim themselves come to Beis Din and testify that this is their handwriting. Compare it with other signatures of theirs on file, have other Edim come, whatever any of the usual ways of being Mekayim Shtaris. Once they're Mekayim it, then we don't believe the Malva anymore to say that it's not a valid one. Now, according to the Yumi Ba'aba, why not? It still may have been pre-written, and just because, fine, it has Edim signed on it, doesn't mean that we still shouldn't say that it hasn't been used yet, as Rabbi Yumi Ba'aba said. And Tosfos points out the fact that the Braisa is calling it Simpon again implies that it's in the hand of a Malva. First of all, because of that, because when it's in the hands of a loiva, instead we call it a shover in Gemara terminology. But second of all, Tosfos says, because there's no chiddush. Obviously, if the loiva has a shtar, obviously if the loiva has a shover that he paid off the debt, and he's Mekayim the signatures of the Edom on it, obviously we would believe him, and there's no chiddush in it. So the chiddush has to be that even when it's in the hands of the Malva, and that seems to go against what Rabbi Yumi Ba'aba is saying. Now, the Gemara on the face of it could have answered the same thing that we're talking about, that you find it among the Shtoris Kruim, and the Shach. In fact, the Shulchan Aruch discusses why the Gemara didn't use that answer. In the previous cases, you have in our Mishnah, Motzer, Im Yesh Imohin Simponus, if you find Simponus with them, implying that's found together with other Shtoris. Similarly, also, we have Motzer Ben Shtaroisa. He finds among his Shtaris that the Shtar of Yosef Ben Shimon is paid off. But here, when it comes to this last Braisa about a Simpon, it doesn't even mention that it was found among Shtaris, so therefore it's harder to explain it that way. And then he goes on to talk about what about according to the other explanation of Rashi. Okay, anyway, the point is, again, this Braisa seems to contradict Rabbi Yumi Ababa, because here you're saying that all you have to do is validate the signatures, certify the signatures, and have Beis Din write a henpek on it, and then that's it, it's a valid shover, whereas according to Rabbi Yumi Ababa, that doesn't even help, because it's still in the hands of the Malva. And the answer is Ema. You can answer, you can say that Braisa means to say, not Yiskayim Bichoismav, meaning that we need to do a kiyum on it, but Yiskayim Meichoismav. We're going to be Mekayim. We're going to decide what the situation is with the shtar based on this ones who signed on it. Meaning the Shailin and Lahu Lasadi. We're going to ask the Edim. I Parua, I Loi Parua. here, you signed on this server. Did you actually see the payment? And if not, then the malware will be believed that he only prepared the server in advance and even had the Adam sign on it for when the loiver comes. So that's what the Braisa may mean, not necessarily bichosma, but mechosma. So no contradiction to the Biyumi Ba'aba. We would say that now this simpoint is found in the hands of the malver. What we do is we ask the Edim what the story is, and then based on that, we say whether we're going to believe the malver to claim that the debt was paid off or not. Okay, the Gemara says Toshma. Let's bring another proof from a Braisa. A Braisa says simpoint sheyesh olav Edim, a simpoint that has Edim on it. And again, a simpoint, the definition is that it's in the hands of the malver. And besides which, again, if it's in the hands of a loiver, then there's no chiddush. Not only that, but if it's in the hands of a loiver, obviously it has to have edim on it. If it has no edim, then it's worthless. So the Braisa says, simpon sheyashal of edim, kosher. So if it has edim on it, then it's kosher. And according to the Biyumi Ba'aba, it shouldn't necessarily be. And the answer is, my edim edikiyum. The answer is that when we say there's edim, we don't mean the original edim that signed it. We mean there's a henpik on it. We mean they actually brought it to Beis Din and had the signatures validated, and Beis Din wrote a henpik on it and edim signed it. So therefore, now Beis Din wouldn't do that unless the guy actually paid off. So therefore we can be sure that it was in fact paid off. It's different if it just had the original edim on it. You can say you prepared it in advance, but when it comes to kiyum, then they're only going to do that only if it was actually paid off. For that matter also, even as far as the kiyum itself, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, you're not going to do the kiyum unless the loiver is present. And then we would be able to make any claims. Well, also when the malver is present, rather, and then at that point would be when the malver would make any claims of it having been paid off or not. Okay. In fact, the Gemara says hachinami mistabra. In fact, it's logical to say that the edim we mean is edikiyum. Midkatoni sefer, because the sefer of that same braisa continues, v'she'ein ol of edim posel. If there's no edim on it, then it's posel. Now, my ain ol of edim. What do you mean there's no edim on it? Do you mean there's no edim at all on the simpon? Do you need to say, obviously, without any edim, you can't really do anything with it? Evidently, then the Braisa is saying there's no edikium, and therefore, because the malva has it in his possession, then therefore, as Rabbi Yumi Ba'aba said, it's not a valid shover. The loiver can't use it as a proof that the debt is paid off, because all you have on it is the edim who originally signed it. And we could say the malva prepared that all in advance for when the loiver shows up with the money, but not necessarily that he actually, but once we have edikium, then the Braisa is saying that in fact it is fully valid. So yes, the Braisa, when it mentions edim, sheyeshal of edim, sheinol of edim, is referring to edikium. So therefore then, so not only does that not contradict Rabbi Yumi Ba'aba, but it supports his position. Okay, so fine. So we haven't shlugged up Rabbi Yumi Ba'aba, and the halacha in fact is like, so the Gemara says Gufa. Getting back to, we brought a Braisa before. Simpan Shiyeshal of Edim, we just said. Simpan Shiyeshal of Edim is Skaim Bachos. At the bottom of the previous Amud, we brought a Braisa that said when you have a simpon that has edim on it, meaning, in other words, and we just said that edim means edikium, Yiskayim Bachosmav, then it's validated by the ones who signed it, where we said, again, first we thought it meant you need to be Mekayim it. Now we're saying that no, on the contrary, now that's already Mekuyam, all we need to do is ask the Edim who originally signed it, and said that they tell us whether it was paid off or not. Rashi over here actually explains slightly differently and says that we're talking about Yiskayim B'choismav, means, in other words, again, that it already has a henpik on it, and therefore we ask the Edikium, we ask the second set of Edim, who validated the signatures, and see what the story is with the shtar. which means, in other words, that Marsha explains that actually before we said that we have to change the wording of the Braisa to Yiskayim Mechosimov, meaning we have to ask the original Edom who signed it what the story is. Now that the Gemara has established that when the Braisa in these contexts is mentioning Edom, it means Edekium, then you don't really need that anymore. Then we can go back to the original understanding, Yiskayim Mechosimov, that the Shtar is automatically valid because it has a henpik on it, and therefore we don't need anything, and therefore we don't need anything else. So the Braisa continues. Ein olav edim. What happens? The Braisa continues. If there's no edim, meaning no edikium on the simbon, but the yotze mitachas yedei sholish. But instead of it being in the hands of the loiva or the malva, instead we find it in the hands of a third party where they deposited it with him for safekeeping. Or if the shover is written on the shtar itself, on the shtar chov itself, after the signatures of the edim, then it's kosher. Now, why is that? The reason why, when it's found in the hands of a sholish, we automatically accept it's valid even without edikium, because after all, the malva trusted the sholish, and that means whatever the sholish says is the story with this shtar, then we're going to follow that. In the Mishnah, we had a case where the sholish himself forgets what the story is with the shtar, and then we said, but here we're talking about that the sholish is saying definitively that it was paid off, and therefore if the malva says anything to the contrary, we're not going to believe him, because we're going to say, look, you trusted this guy to begin with, so therefore we have to accept what he's saying, what the sholosh is saying. As far as yotzel achav chitum shtaris nami, and when the shover is written on the shtar itself after the signatures of Edim, then also we say it's kosher again, even if it's in the hands of the malva, and not, that won't be like the case that Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba said that we assume he had it pre-written. The ilav de priya, I have a model of the shtari. If it wasn't actually paid off, he wouldn't ruin his shtar by writing a shover right there on the paper itself. So therefore, that gives us much more reason to assume that it is in fact paid off, and not that. That it has been paid off, and not like Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba's case that he pre-wrote it. So we have a number of cases, in short, where the shover is. So we have Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba's basic din that if it's in the hands of the malva, we don't accept it, because we say he may have had it pre-written to have available at a moment's notice. However, if we find it, and again, you have the two explanations, and actually what the it is, the original shtar or the shover among the ripped up shtaris, or if there's a kiyum on it, or if it's in the hands of a sholish, or if the shover is written on the shtar chov itself, in all those cases, we say the shover is valid, and it shows that the debt has in fact been paid off. Hadron alach shnayim oksin. Perek Elam Mutzias. Now we're going to be talking about this. Perek is mostly going to be talking about the dinim of. So now we've been talking for half the previous perek about what you do if you find things, mostly focusing on if you find shtaris. Now we're going to talk about more generally the dinim of lost and found. The dinim when you find a lost object, what you have to do with it, when you have to return it, when you don't have to return it, what cases, what you should do with it while it's in your possession, et cetera, that's going to be the subject of most of this paper. I must say, by the way, when it came to preparing it, you find that Elam Atzias, like this, you know, you'll learn it, what, first and fourth or fifth grade or whatever, learning it with advanced Mephoshim, it's a whole different paper. It really is, yeah. Anyway, Mishnah starts off. Elam Atzias Shaloi, the following things, if a person finds them, belong to him, the Elu Chayv Lahakwiz versus the following ones he has to announce. So the Mishnah is first going to list a bunch of things. In our Mishnah, we're going to list a bunch of things where if you find them, they don't have a simon on them, as the Gemara is going to work out for each one of them in detail, and therefore you can keep them, because we assume the owner was Miyayish from them. Whereas then the next Mishnah is going to start dealing with ones where Chayv Lahakwiz is because there's some kind of simon. An interesting nuance, actually, the Ritva points out that usually the Mishnah tries to make things parallel. So why not Elo She'en Chayiv L'Hakriz V'Elo She'Chayiv L'Hakriz? Why say Shaloi on the first group? So he says, because the point is, the Mishnah wants to stress to us, even if later on, so you have this thing that Hareyo Shaloi, any of the things it mentions in the Mishnah. Suppose somebody comes with Edim, fine, he doesn't have a simon on it, because. But suppose he later on comes with Edim that it's his. Nevertheless, you don't have to return it to him, because Shaloi, it's completely yours, because we assume he was Miyayish, and the fact that because most people are going to be Miyayish, the Gemara is going to work out for each one of them, and therefore even this particular guy brought Edim, then it doesn't mean anything. He's obviously not Miyayish, but nevertheless, since in general people are Miyayish from it, then we say, the Gemara gives an example later in the Perek, for example, you have an example where somebody lost a coin in sand, and then even he brings a sieve and starts sifting the sand, we say, you know, realistically, he's looking to see, maybe he'll find something else that somebody else dropped, doesn't show he wasn't Miyayish. So the same thing over here, the Ritva would say, that just because he brings Edim doesn't show that to begin with he wasn't Miyayish, and now he says, you know what, but let me actually try it anyhow. I have nothing to lose, but yeah. Okay, so Eila Metzias Shaloi. The following kinds of Metzias belong to him, belong to the one who finds it. Matzah Peiros Mekuzarin. If he finds Peiros, produce that's scattered, and we'll see in the Gemara just how scattered. Mois Mekuzarin. So if he finds coins that are scattered, and these things don't have a simon. So Rashi explains, is Miyayish, and therefore they become Hefter. Tos, we learned actually in Bava Kamma that Tosfos had learned over there that Yush is not exactly Hefker, but it's similar. Achronim talk about, I think the Tos talks about, that the distinction is that that Yush means a sieve, that Hefker means the moment he makes it Hefker, it becomes no longer his, as opposed to Yush, it really actually remains his until somebody else picks it up. So Mishnah continues, Krichus b'Rishus Rabim. If you find bundles of grain in Rishus Rabim, and we're going to have later on Chof Beis and Beis, Gimel and Aleph, we're going to have a long Machlokas Rabba and Rava, exactly what the scenario is over here involving these Krichus. Are we talking about that, what size Krichus are we talking about? Are we talking about that, would the place where they were found be the Simen? Would conceivably the knot that we used to tie them would that be a Simen, etc.? The Gemara is going to work all that out. Tosfos has a bit of discussion over here, in fact, about the ins and outs of that. In particular, in general, in our Mishnah, are we talking about, now you have later on in the parak, we're going to discuss the distinction between derech nefila and derech inua. Sometimes you find something derech nefila, it's obviously in a way where the person dropped. Then you have, sometimes you find something derech inuach, you find something in a way where it shows that he put it down for a while deliberately. Now, later on in the parak, we're going to have an example where if you find something derech inuach, you shouldn't take it, because obviously the owner is going to come back for it. But still, even in that, you can distinguish, for example, how safe a place is this place where you found the derech inuach. So Tosfos goes into a little bit of discussion about those kinds of things. For example, the krichos, a person is not going to drop them without knowing about it. It means, for example, he stopped to rest in the street while he's carrying the krichos and put them down, and then later on he forgot them. And the same thing with bread that the Gemara is going to talk about soon. So yeah. So Tosfos says that where you find it in a private place, in a place where it's mishtamer, then yeah, you shouldn't take it, because then you're ruining the simen, because then the simen is going to be where you found it. And like this, if you take it away from there, then that simen no longer exists, and the guy's not going to come back. The guy's going to be miyayish on it when he comes back and doesn't find it. But here we're talking about that you found it. It may be derech inuach, but you found it in Rishus Rabim or something close to Rishus Rabim, and therefore we assume, yes, the person put it down, but then he forgot it, and therefore, yeah, you can still take it, and you can still keep it, because otherwise there's no sin in it. So that's the Kirchas B'Shus Rabim, the Igulei Dvela, or round cakes of pressed figs. So again, they're all made basically the same, and there's no simen in it. Kikris Shom Nachtoim, loaves of bread that are made by a baker, where so Rashi explains that all the bakers make their loaves the same shape. The Rashash points out, actually, not really. There's Mishnayos in other places, in Dmai, I think, and other places that talk about that. No, different bakers make them in different shapes. Fine, but the point is, within each baker himself, he makes them all the same shape. So therefore, so you still don't really have a simon between one and another. Each company makes them slightly differently. Yeah, whatever. Machrozes Shodogim, strings of fish. Whereas the Gemara is going to point out, yeah, many times when people put the same number of fish on each string. So, uh, So yeah, actually what it is the Rashash says, actually, as far as the Kikros Shel Nachtan, he says the vote is not that each baker makes them all the same. The point is, we still don't know with any individual loaf, did the baker drop it or did the customer drop it? So therefore, so neither one of them has much of a claim to it. As opposed to Kikros Shel Bala Bayis, we have much more reason. The Bala Bayis in the next Mishnah makes bread for himself. He doesn't usually sell or give away that bread, so therefore it's much more likely that he dropped it. Anyway.
A commercial baker,
that's the point. You don't. It may be in the bakery, but he still might be carrying one with him to take home for himself, for example, versus he might have sold it to a customer. So machrozes shel dogim, strings of fish, vachatichas shel basar, or pieces of meat, where again, as the Gemara is going to point out, they're all basically the same size and shape, so you don't really have anything distinctive about it, you know, to think of it in modern terms. Let's say you find a package of salami, all slices look exactly the same. The gizet tsemer halakuchin b'medinasan, or you find shearings of wool, fleeces of wool that come b'medinasan from their country. Meaning, in other words, as they were shorn off the sheep, and then they look exactly the same as every other fleece. As opposed to, Rashi points out, the next Mishnah is going to mention, on the other hand, haboris mebesa uman, once they're coming from the craftsman, where he's supposed to be dyeing, where he's supposed to be processing them or dyeing them or whatever, he'll make some kind of simen on them, because after all, a lot of people bring him their fleeces, he has to make sure not to mix them up. So he'll put some kind of simen on it, so then whatever simen that is will serve as a simen. But here we're talking about alakochas mebedinasan, the original farmer has the fleece, and then he drops it, and it looks exactly like every other fleece. The Rosh actually brings a different explanation of mimidinasan. He says it can also be related to a word for tying. So it means that these fleeces are, you usually tie together a bunch of fleeces, and here you have that. You find like that. And again, it's similar to the bundles, the shosarabim or whatever, where there's nothing distinctive about the way they're tied or the number of them or whatever. As the Gemara is going to point out, you're going to have later on, for example, as far as the strings of fish, you have a case where everybody puts the same number of fish on a string. So the same way over here, everybody puts X number of fleeces in a bundle, and therefore there's no simon. Anyway, the Mishnah continues. Va'anitze pishtan, or bundles of flax, where again they look like every other bundle. All the flax is a plant that you make linen out of. So here you have flax stalks, or maybe you have the flax fibers or whatever, which you haven't yet made into linen. So again, you have a standard kind of bundle of them, which again, there's no simon. Lashonis shalagoman, or strips of purple wool. Purple wool is expensive stuff. Purple dye in those times was very expensive, but still, again, they're like every other strip of purple wool, and therefore he doesn't really have a simon. Hareyel shaloi divrei a mayor. So the mayor says, so hareyel shaloi, all these things he can keep. Divrei a mayor. That's what the mayor says. There are actually rishonim who don't have the girsa divrei a mayor, and that makes a difference as far as the halacha. Here we're going to have Rabbi Yehuda is going to mention a different opinion now in the Mishnah. Now, usually we have a rule when it's Rabbi Meir against Rabbi Yehuda. Usually the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. On the other hand, when you have a Stam Mishnah, usually the halacha is like that. So if the first half of our Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah, yes, Stam Mishnah and Meir, but if it doesn't actually have his name attached, then it means the halacha is going to be like it. Whereas if we say Divrei Rabbi Meir, then it means that no, the halacha is going to be like the next statement that Rabbi Yehuda says.
Yeah, if it's Stam Mishnah and Meir.
So the Mishnah is like the first part of the Mishnah is like a mayor either way, because Stam Mishnah and a mayor. But if it says Divrei Rabbi Meir, then it means now when Rabbi Yehuda comes and disagrees on a certain detail, then the halacha is going to be like him, like Rabbi Yehuda. As opposed to if you say the first part does not have the words Divrei Rabbi Meir, then it means the halacha is like it. Rabbi Yehuda, by the way, the reason why the Mishnah had to give so many examples, first of all, we're going to talk about on Omud Beis, that a number of them, the Gemara is going to go through a few of them and show that they relate, that they bear on the Machlokas Abaye and Rava about Yir Shalei Midas, which we're going to start talking about soon. So, and different ones, you have a different chiddush in them. In fact, the Ritva works out how with each one of them, there's a chiddush over the previous ones. Each one has a unique chiddush about it. Some of them because they're heavy, and as the Gemara is going to say, a person will notice right away when he dropped them. Some of them we say that even though you might think there's a slight simon in them, there's not. And so on and so forth. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a koshi yesh by shinui chayv lahachid. Rabbi Yehuda says, anytime you find something unusual in it, that even if he doesn't necessarily know that shinui was there in the first place, even if it wasn't deliberately placed in there, then chayv lahachid. Ketzad, what does that mean? For example, Motze Igul of a Soche Cheres. For example, we said you don't have to return Igule Dvela because they're all the same. But if you find a shard of earthenware inside the Igul Dvela, then that can serve as a simen. Doesn't even necessarily mean the person deliberately put that in there when he made the Igul Shal Dvela. But nevertheless, since it's there, you, the finder, have to assume that maybe the guy does know about it, and therefore you should announce that Igul Dvela and see if anybody comes forward with that simen. So that would be one example. I was going to say, for example, so the Ritva, when he goes through the list over here, for example, he mentioned the Lashonis Shel Agamon. The Chiddush is you shouldn't think of color as a simen, because again, you have a lot of strips of purple wool, a lot of strips of wool out there that are dyed purple. You have, let's say, with the Anitze Pishton and then a couple of the others, you have, for example, the person who found it is going to announce, I found flax. What if somebody comes and says, okay, you found it in the form of Anitze? It doesn't help, because that's still not a simen, because there's lots of Anitze Pishton out there and so forth. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda is saying, right? So Anitze Pishton means like you have a bundle of stalks of flax. So even if the person comes and says, you found the flax in stalks in a bundle, that's still not enough of a sin. Yeah. You have also, by the way, there is the point that that Rishonim point out, you know, when you come to Paris, and so here you have the Chidushim Ham Yuchosim La Ritva point out, as I mentioned in the first paragraph, you have the Ritva's actual Chidushim that were published about 60 years ago, and then you have Chidushim that were published under his name for several hundred years, which apparently are actually from some other Rishon. Anyway, so Chidushim Ham Yuchosim La Ritva points out, in the case of Paris and coins, why don't we say the number of them is a simon, as the Gemara is going to mention later on in the paragraph. And he says, because people don't always know. A person doesn't necessarily know how many payrus or how many coins he was carrying. If you find, as we're going to have later in the paragraph, you find coins in a certain pattern, for example, then that can be a simon. But just to say, for example, that you found five coins lying randomly on the street, you can't necessarily expect that the person is going to know that he was carrying exactly five coins and dropped them. So therefore, the number is not a simon.
Find something in the Home Depot. As a bundle, you know.
Then you're gonna have a bundle. Then you're gonna have a bundle, but then the bundle is gonna be a simon. We're talking about we find loose coins in the street.
Yeah, but all the bundles come with 20 pieces.
No, so that's true. If all the bundles come in a standard amount, then it's true. Even a bundle wouldn't be a simon. But we're talking about here, you found loose coins. So, but the point is, the Chidushim Amiyuchasim La Ritva points out people don't necessarily know exactly how many coins they. Let alone, also, we're talking about he may have dropped them in different places. For all he knows, he may have dropped one coin over here and two coins over there, or whatever. So you don't really have a simon. Anyway, so again, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, Kol sheyesh bo shinui, anytime you have a variation from usual chayav la'achuz, then you have to announce it. Ketzad, motze igul, v'soichei cheres, for example, you found a cake of pressed figs, and inside it you find a piece of earthenware, then you have to announce it. Similar to kikur, v'soichei mois, or if you find a loaf of bread, even if it's from the bakery, and there are coins inside it. Again, the person who bought the bread may not even know that, but nevertheless, you have to be concerned that maybe he does know about it. So go ahead and be machlis, and then the guy, somebody may come forward with a sin.
The guy who put it in
the nose. Not necessarily, does he know? He may have had the coins nearby, and he accidentally mixed them into the dough. The Gemara in Gittin tells a story like that. Yeah. Okay. The Mishnah finishes off. Reb Shimon Elazar Omer, Kol Klei and Puya Ein Chayav L'Hach. Reb Shimon also says, any kalim of anpuya, which means, as the Gemara is going to explain, it means new kalim, where a person doesn't recognize the yet that they're particularly his, ain chayav l'hachriz, you don't have to announce on them. Now, later on in the Gemara, when we deal with this in the Gemara, Rashi explains that the word anpuya is short for the words ain poi raya. There's no proof over here because you have no simon on it, and then they're exactly the same as any other ones that you would buy. We'll talk about a Tamar Chacham yet to be a sign. We'll get to that on Dach of Gimel Chavdalad. Yeah. The Musaf Aruch actually points out the word Anpuria really actually comes from a Greek word that means something that you sell. You have in English, you have the word Emporium, for example. It's a fancy word for a store. It comes from the same Greek word. So Klei Anpuria really means kalim that you just bought and you don't have a simon in order to be a sign. Okay. So the Gemara says, Matzah Peres Mefuzarin. We're saying if you find scattered fruit, the Kama. How much, what's the proportion that's considered scattered? If you find a cab of them scattered in a cab of grain, for example, scattered in an area of 4x4 amas. Meaning if it was any less space than that, then it's more concentrated, and then we assume that he's gonna come and collect it. Tosfos
wasn't five.
No, we're talking about loose. We're talking about loose on the ground. Well, the Gemara asks, and Tosfos points out, by the way, that sometimes you have in the Gemara where the Gemara will ask a question and somebody will give the answer. The question is itself part of his answer, meaning it's not that the stomach the Gemara asked the Kama and then along comes Rabbi Yitzchak and explains his Kabba Amos. Means Rabbi Yitzchak himself introduces his explanation in the Mishnah. You want to know of a Kama, I'll tell you how much is the Kama. The point being, in other words, again, otherwise Rabbi Yitzchak wouldn't, because otherwise the point is that we could have easily explained the Mishnah as talking about something else. Like this, we're talking about that you found them scattered, as we're going to go on to say, when you're collecting from the threshing floor. But instead of explaining like that, we could easily have explained it a different way. And instead, Rabbi Yitzchak is telling us, no, explain it this way. In other words, if the Gemara asked the Kama, and then we have to wait for Rabbi Yitzchak to give us an explanation, meanwhile, the Gemara could have come up with other explanations. Anyway. So the Gemara asked, Pechi Domi, well, what's the scenario? E derech nefila, if we're talking about you find this grain looks like it fell, like the person dropped it unintentionally, after the Tuva Nami, then what's the difference, whether it's a kav or not? Even if it's more than a kav, you should say Harei Elo Shaloi, because there's no simen in it. The E derech hinuach, if it looks like he placed it there deliberately and plans to come back for it later, after the Betzir Menahokin Nami Loi, then you shouldn't even be able to take it, even if it's less than that, even if it's less than a kav or more scattered or whatever, because he's obviously going to come back and take it. The answer is Omer of Ukva Bachoma, Hochab Machnashta de Beidori Askin. What we're talking about over here is when you're clearing the threshing floor. So you use this area to thresh your grain. Now, when you're done, you want to collect all the grain and bring it to someplace else to continue processing it. So now, as you're taking all of the grain, then some of it gets left behind, and now you have a kav left in a space of 4x4 amas, so less than that, or more of a space than that. So we're talking about when he's collecting from the threshing floor over there. So kav ba'aba amas de nafish tukhayu, when he left a calf in a space of 4x4 amas, it's a big tircha to gather it up. Like torach inish, a person is not usually going to bother. So he's not going to come and take it. Afkuri mafkur lahu. Instead, he's just going to be mafkur it. Betzir mehochi. But if it's less than 4x4 amas, or if it's more grain than that, there's less tircha. Torah, so then it's less of a tircha, b'hodr osi b'shokel lahu, b'lay mafkel lahu. So he is going to come and take it, and he's not going to be mafker it, and therefore you can't keep it because you have a strong reason to assume that he is going to come back for it. Okay. So the Gemara says, boy Rabbi Yirmiyah, chatzi kav b'shtei amas mahu. What would happen if you find a half a calf of grain in a space of 2 amas? Now, Tosfos asks, what do you mean? A half a calf in 2 amas is the same as 1 calf in 4 amas. What's the question? So Tosfos gives 2 answers. One is that, first of all, you might say, on the one hand, it's only a half a calf. It doesn't take that much trouble to gather it. On the other hand, is he going to think, is it worthwhile for only half a calf? On the other hand, Tosfos says another way you could understand that Rabbi Yirmiyah Ba'aba means to ask, what if it's a half a calf, and instead of being 4x4, like this, we said a calf in 4 amas, 4x4 amas, which is 16 square amas. Now Rabbi Yirmiyah is asking, it's only a half a calf, but it's more concentrated. It's in a space of 2x2 amas, not half the space, but a quarter of the space, 2x2 amas. So the length and the width of the square are half the size, or each half the size, which comes out there for a quarter of the area. On the other hand, so it's much more concentrated. On the other hand, so there's less tircha. On the other hand, it is only half a calf. Is he going to bother? So that's Tosfos' second way of explaining Rabbi Yirmiyah's question. So would we say ba'arba amas time of mai mishum the nafish tochayu? Would you say kav ba'arba amas time of mai? Why would you say if it's 1 calf and 4 amas, why would he be mafkir it? Because it's a big tircha. So in that case, chatzi kav b'shtei amas. Well, then a half a calf and 2 amas, it's not such a tircha, according to Tosfos, because it's only half a calf to pick up, and according to the second explanation in Tosfos, because it's in a more concentrated area. Therefore, loy mafkur lahu, so you won't be mafkur them. Or maybe the primary thing is because not choshuv, it's not worth bothering with such a small amount. Well, then in that case, katzi kav b'shtei amas, kivin loy chashivi, mafkur lahu, well, then all the more so, a half a calf and 2 amas, then he's not going to bother. What about then? Rabbi Yirmiyah continues with another question. Habayim b'shmona amos mahu. What happens if you find two kav in a space of 8 amos? So again, according to Tosfos's first explanation, we mean 8 by 4 amos. We mean double the amount of grain and double the area. But nevertheless, the question is, maybe two kav is more important and he'd actually bother going back for that, even though it's a tircha. Or according to Tosfos's second explanation, it would come out, we mean two kav in an area of 8 by 8 amos. So an area, so like this, it's an area 4 times the size that we were talking about before. Before it was one cab in 4 by 4 amos and 16 square amos. Now we'd be talking about two cabim in a space of 64 square amos. So much bigger. Why would he say that if he finds one cab in 4 amos, he can keep it? Mishum the nafish to chayu, because it's a tircha to collect it. B'choshek and kabay mishmona amos, given the nafish to nefisha to chayu tfei. 2 cabim in 8 amos is even more of a tircha, according to either explanation in Tosfos. So mafgu lahu, he'll be mafgu them. Ardumah mishum d'loy chashivi. Or maybe you say, because one cab is not important, it's not worth bothering coming for, but kabay mishmona amos, given to chashivi, but 2 cab, already 2 cab is a significant amount. So even though it's an 8 amos, loy mafgu. Who he won't be master then. So that's another question. Another question asked Rabbi Yemiya, Kav Shumshim in Ba'arba Amas Mav. What about if instead of a cab of grain, what if it was a cab of sesame seeds, which are smaller and harder to collect? Another possibility, sometimes Shumshim means poppy seeds, which are even smaller. So the question is, is the primary thing that a cab and 4 amos of grain is not important enough for him to deal with? Well then, the shumshamin kiven da chashivi, but shumshamin are important because they're more expensive, loy mafka lehu, so he won't so easily be mafka them, and we assume he will come back and collect them. Or maybe it's because it's a greater tircha, but choshek and shumshamin, well then shumshamin are an even greater tircha, because they're smaller, whether they're sesame seeds or poppy seeds, they're smaller than grain. So given the nafish tirchayu tfei, it's even more of a tircha, mafgu lahu, then maybe all the more so he would be mafgu them. And then we can ask the other way around. Kav tamri ba'arba amas, kav rimoni ba'arba amas mahu. What would happen if it was what would happen if you found a cav of dates or of pomegranates in a space 4 by 4 amos? So those are much bigger fruit. Kav ba'arba amas time amay mishum d'loy chashivi. Would you say the primary point is it's not choshuv? Well then, kav tamri ba'arba amas, kav rimoni ba'arba amas nami kivin d'loy chashivi mafgulahu. Well, in that case, these things are even less important. They're less valuable than grain, so he may not bother. Or maybe in the case of grain, the key factor is the amount of tircha. Well, these are larger fruits. It's much less of a tircha to pick up a cab of them from a space 4 by 4 amos, so you wouldn't be mafka them. My, so what's the din in all those cases? And the answer is teku, where the result is, in other words, you shouldn't take them, but if you did, then you're not obligated to return them. Agos Agro, by the way, refers to over here, the Rambam has a bit of a different girsa as far as the last one. The Rambam doesn't have a girsa that we have separate question about the sesame seeds versus about the dates and pomegranates. Rather, he explains that it's all mixed together. If you find a cav of produce of mixed types, some of it is sesame, some of the cav is sesame seed, and some of it is fig, is dates, and some of it is pomegranates, then what would be the din?
It doesn't mean you put away your weight.
So ideally, it means that you shouldn't take it in the first place because it might be that the person is planning to come back and get it. But if you did take it, then hamotzi mechavel avarai. Okay. So the Gemara says itzmar. Now we have a discussion of amiroyim on the question yirsh shalomi das. When you find something, you know that as soon as the person finds out that he lost it, he's going to have yirsh. But you don't know yet whether he had yirsh. Does that work? Abaya Omar, I have a yush, but Rava Omar have a yush. Abaya says that's not considered yush. You have to wait until you know that he was miyayish, whereas Rava says it's already considered yush because once he's miyayish, then retroactively it'll work to now. The Raven, in fact, brings up an interesting point. Why are they even arguing about that? Isn't that basically the same thing as Brera? You have in general the question of Brera. When something happens later on, does it work retroactively? So here it seems like, you know, eventually he's going to be Miyash. Does it work retroactively to when you found it that now you can keep it? So why is it even a separate machloikas in the first place? And we're showing him, I think, the Rashba, and others explain the difference is that with Breira, you have, we know at some point it is going to be clarified. You're going to take out the Truma. You're going to, the property is going to be divided among the Yoshim or whatever, and then we can talk about whether it works retroactively. Here, we don't even know. There may never be Yosh. So therefore, so it's a different machalikas. So the Gemara explains, b'davar she'yesh bo simen, when you're talking about an item that has a simen on it, the kula amalei pligi delay have a Yosh. Everybody would agree that there's no yush, but afgav d'shem ine d'miyayish, even if we actually heard the person saying yush, which the Gemara explains later on in the Perek, that he says, vayle l'chisor and kiss, oyvei, I've lost this, so that shows that he was miyayish, l'soif l'have a yush, l'soif, in the end, loy have a yush, it still won't be yush, it's still not valid yush, meaning you're still not allowed to keep it, because in that case, when you first picked it up, it was also because since it had a simen, you knew to begin with, there's less likelihood it's going to be miyash, and therefore, as the Gemara works out in detail later on in the Perek, then you're going to have that at that point, the finder has actually been over on several mitzvahs by picking it up, not planning to return it. He's over on Lois Sigzo, on Lois Sofa, Lois Alem, and a couple of others. So therefore, so even if afterwards the guy is Miyash, then it's too late and it doesn't change the fact that he originally got it, the Issu.
Well, yeah.
So that's what we're saying. So if you have a simon, then you have to announce it. That's what we're saying. So if you find something that has a simon, you have to pick it up and you have to announce it. The Elu Chai V'Hachariz. But what we're saying is that, so you find something, it has a simon on it. You think to yourself, you know what? Probably the guy is going to be miyayish soon. I may as well keep it for myself. No, since it has a simon, you don't have the right to think that way. Even Rover is going to agree that that's no good. Because to begin with, the finder we took it in a way of iser. Because as soon as the person who realizes they lost it, as soon as he realizes that he dropped it, he's not going to be miyash. Omar, because he's going to think to himself, simona isle bigabe. I have a simon, and after all, you have a simona v'shakil nalei. So all I have to do is give a simon, and I will get it back. So therefore, even if later on he does end up being miyash, but nevertheless, at the time when he lost it, at the time when he realized he lost it, there was no yush. And therefore, that wouldn't take away the fact that the original person had stolen it.
It's only if
it has a simon, we're saying.
No, it's also only if he found it.
We're talking about a city of old Jews. Yeah, we're going to talk about later in the Perek what happens when it's in a city where they're going. So in other words, Tosfos says, even when we hear him being miyash, it's only akrai ba'alma. It so happens that he was miyash, but to begin with, when he dropped it, we can expect that he was not miyash at the time. And therefore, when you picked it up, then that's a problem because you shouldn't have, obviously, again, you're picking it up in order to announce it. That's something different, but we're talking about you picking it up in order to keep it. So, on the other hand, now, on the other hand, if you find something in Zute Shoyam, in the area that the tide overflows, so Rashi says a very interesting explanation over here. He says that, so you have the tides where the water level in the ocean rises and falls twice a day. It's basically because of the moon's gravity, whatever. That the moon's gravity pulls on the water and brings it higher or lower. So you have tides twice a day. But Rashi uses an odd expression over here. He says that the water retreats and then advances 10 or 15 parsa, which is very interesting because a parsa is like 3 or 4 miles, like 2 or 3 miles. So 10 or 15 parsa, you'd be talking like 20 or 30 miles or so. There's no, there are many places in the world where the tides go that far inland? So I saw actually there were a few people discussing it online and trying to figure out. You can't even say it's a mistake, like a toast force or something in Rashi, because Rashi says the exact same thing in Masechta Avodah Zarah. So whether maybe Rashi means a parasa means a smaller amount of measurement, maybe he doesn't mean a regular parasa of 2.5 or 3 miles. Maybe it means the area of the water that gets stirred up by the tides. That's one person wanted to suggest that. It means, in other words, that you find that in that shallow area of the water where the rising and falling of the tide is most noticeable. Whether maybe Rashi is referring to tsunamis, where you do have that there's a considerable blowback and then inundation of water or whatever. Anyway, the point is that wouldn't be twice a day, though. Anyway, the point is, so if you find something in that Zuta Shoyam or Vishlobise Shal Nahar or where a river overflooded, overflowed, then afagab the isbe simen, even if you find a simen on the item, nevertheless, rachmona shavye, the Torah was still not do it, could be in the mamela kamon, as the Gemara is going to point out at the end of the sugya. So there, it's not a question of you shalemi das, because even whether it has a simon or not, right away we can assume right away. So either the point is when it was in zuta shoyam or shalolis shal nahar, then we assume the guy was miyayish as soon as he finds out that it was flooded by the river, or it may not even be. You're showing him talk about it's not necessarily because he was miyayish, but it's special gzeres hakosiv, as the Gemara is going to work out later on chof beis amid beis, that the Torah is matirid in that case, even if we don't know whether the guy was miyayish. So again, the machlokas abayan rabba is not going to refer to that kind of case where you found something in zuta shoyam or shalolis shal nahar. Keep pligi, the machloikas would be bedavar she'ein bo simen. You find something that does not have a simen. So now, is the fact that later on the guy is going to be miyash, when he finds out about it, does that help now that if you picked it up, then it's considered that it's yours and you didn't receive it, then you didn't get it be iser or not? Abaya omaloi have a yush. So Abaya says it's not yush. Deholo yod de nofamine. The guy doesn't know he dropped it yet. Until he realizes that he dropped it, he's not going to have yush. And the fact that he may have yush later on doesn't help you right now that you should be allowed to keep it. Rava am have a yush. Rava says it is valid yush. Delaki yodad nafumine. As soon as he realizes he dropped it, miyayish, then he's going to be miyayish, and that will help retroactively. Even meima ama is going to think to himself, simona lesliv gabe, I have no simon in it. Mehashta hu de miyayish. So therefore, as of now already, his yush is effective. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to go through a whole bunch of attempted proofs, one way or the other, to disprove Rava or to disprove Abaya.
Back to what we thought, if he's miyash now or not, but yet but soon, has to do if he's babala touch.
So not so much if he's, right, so in other words, yeah. So now, again, there is going to be a case where he's allowed to touch it because he's going to do Ashava Saveda. That's fine. He's picking it up, intending to do Ashava Saveda. That's fine. We're talking about over here, he's picking it up, intending to keep it. So does that work or not? Abaya says no until he actually hears the guy being miyayish, and Rava says that yes. So now the Gemara is going to go through a whole bunch of different proofs to try to disprove Rava or to disprove Abaya. Simen pamgash mam kagti kaksaz. It stands for the initials or the key words of very. I think this is the longest simen, by the way. I think this is the longest simen in initials, anyway, that the Gemara ever uses. It has like 15 letters in it, referring to 15 different mishnayos and brises that the Gemara is going to bring. Although actually, Mefoshim have a bit of a difficult time understanding the exact simen. The beginning of it, yeah, pamgash, for example, stands for peres mois igule dvela. And the shoyness shall agomon. But the rest of them, there seem to be a couple of letters that are not accounted for in the sugya over here. So they discuss exactly what they mean. Anyway, okay. So Toshma, first let's bring a proof from our Mishnah. Peiros mefuzarin. We said you found scattered fruit. The question is, what do you mean you can keep it? Hola yoda de nafal minei. And the person doesn't necessarily know that he dropped this fruit yet. So according to Abaya, why should he be able to keep it? According to Rava, you can understand, because later on he's going to realize the food has no simen. But right now he hasn't been miyayish yet. And the answer, because if we say yush shalemi das is not yush, then yeah. So the answer is ha'omer avuk v'bachoma, as we said on Amar Aleph, focha b'machnashta de bizri askinan. We're talking about when you're collecting the remaining seeds. Bizri means seeds, or Hagoyis Habach changes it to b'machnashta de bei dori, which was the expression that we used on Amar Aleph, where we're collecting what's left on the threshing floor. David Midasi, he knows for a fact that he left it over there because he knows he didn't bother collecting that last cab, and therefore it's not a question of him accidentally dropping it. It's a question of he knows for a fact that he left it there, and since there's no simon in it, we assume he's not bothering to come back for it. So it's not a question of you shalemi das. We know that in that case he's not. We know that in that case he deliberately left it over there.
But if it's in a certain space.
So that's what we said. If it's a cab in less than 4 amas, so it's more than a cab in 4 amas, then we assume it's not a tircha for him to come back and get it, and it's an important amount, and he's going to come and get it. A cab in 4 amas, we said he's not going to bother. So no proof from that one way or the other. Okay, Toshma mois mefuzaris haleh shaloi. What about the Mishnah continues that if you find scattered coins, then you can keep them. Amai, now why, according to Abaya, holo yodod nafal minei. You don't, the person who dropped the coin doesn't necessarily know that he dropped them. And the answer is Hosam Nami. They are also the reason it works. According to Abaya, Kid Rav Yitzchak is based on what Rav Yitzchak says, the Omar, where he says soon in the Gemara, Odom Osi, the Mashmash Pekisim, the Hosha Vasha, a person regularly checks and feels his money bag to see whether his money is there. Hochanami, Odom Osi, the Mashmash Pekisim, the Hosha Vasha. So therefore, very soon after he dropped it, he's going to realize that he lost it, and he's going to say, Vile the Chisorin Kis, because he's going to realize he has no Simon.
Money, you check, but we don't check.
So that's what we're saying. Peiros, we needed a different answer. We needed that Peiros, we're talking about that he left them in Bay Dirty. He left them in the threshing floor. Mois was saying you don't need that. He didn't deliberately leave the coins over there. But as soon as very shortly after he drops the coins, he's going to realize that he did, and therefore he's going to be Miyash from them. By the way, the Achronim talk about, so what about nowadays? It's not necessarily the case that people are Odom Osi L'mashem V'Kisei B'chol Shah V'Shah. As the Chazanish mentions on them, it doesn't matter. Once the Chacham have established that rule, then it remains the case even now, and therefore it would be Hefker. On the other hand, there are Achronim who say maybe not. Maybe when the Metzius has changed, maybe the Halach will change. Okay. Toshma, continuing, the Mishnah had mentioned Igula Dvela V'Kikris Shal Nachta Marela Shalai, that if you find wound cakes of pressed figs or you find loaves from the bakery, then you're allowed to keep them. Amai, now according to Abaya, why should he be allowed to? V'Hala Yodad Enofel Minei, he doesn't necessarily know he dropped them yet. So when he finds out, and he says, V'Hala L'Chisar and Kis, then fine, you have Yush, but until then you don't have Yush, and according to Abaya, it doesn't work.
Other hand, the cat would be by hand.
So the answer is, Halsam Nami Agav Diakiri, because they're heavy, made a yada bahu, therefore he's going to know about them very soon after he dropped them, and therefore right away he'll be miyash. Agos Agra mentions over here that the Rosh understands that the word yakiri means more like chashivi. It means not so much they're heavy, but they're important. Yoker, they're expensive and important, and therefore he's going to realize right away. Marsha also mentions that point that he brings from the Beis Yosef, who says that evidently the Rosh says that they're midi de mechal. He says that igulet vela and kikras shomachtem are food, and therefore they're choshuv. So apparently, yes, he understood the word yakiri of our Gemara to mean not heavy but rather important. That would be derech hinuach. So if you find it in a way where it looks like he put it down, that's something else. But that's what we talk about on Amud Aleph. You were talking about derech nefila. It seems like he dropped it. Yeah. In fact, Marsha says it's very possible that the Rosh had a girsa in the Gemara over here that mentioned another part of the Mishnah like this. The Mishnah skips after he goled veil of kikras shal nachtem. Then the Mishnah, the Gemara over here skips the rest of the Mishnah and doesn't bother asking from it, because already at that point we've already covered everything we need to. However, the Marsha points out the Rosh may have had the Rosh mentioned something separate as far as the gizet semeron and nitzish pitzon and so forth, and mentions the fact that they're heavy. So he says that actually the Rosh may have had a girsa over here that actually adds that to the Gemara, where the Gemara would distinguish the kikrit shal nachtem and the gulid vela. The reason why he's going to realize right away, not so much because they're heavy, but because they're expensive, because they're important, because they're food, as opposed to the gizet semer and so forth, where he would notice it right away because they're heavy. So two different things. So therefore, Agav Diakiri made the Yad Lahu. So therefore, Yad Bahu is going to know about them right away, and therefore he'll be Miyash right away. So even according to Abaya, it will be fine. Toshma, Lashonis Shalagom and Harei L'Shaloi. What about the Mishnah had continued that if you find strips of purple wool, then Harei L'Shaloi, Vamai, Hola Yad Nafame, on the face of it, he doesn't know that he dropped them. And according to Abaya, it shouldn't work. And the answer is Hosam Nami, Agav D'Chashivi. Since they're important, Mamush Mushmi, Mash Mishbahu, he's going to constantly be feeling for them, B'chidr of Yitzchak. So the same as Rabbi Yitzchak says, as far as the money. So in other words, we have several different kinds of things. You have the kinds of things where a person is regularly going to check for example, money and Lashonis Shalagaman. You have things where a person is going to notice right away because they're heavy, and the Rosh draws a distinction within that itself. You have things that are not necessarily heavy, but rather Choshuv versus things that are heavy, such as the Anitze Pishtan and Gizis Shaltzemer and so forth. Okay. Toshma, let's bring a proof. A Braisa says, "Hamotzim mois v'botik nesias v'botim medrashes." A person finds coins in a shul or in a base medrash, or v'chol makom shor rabim mitzuyim jam, or any place where there's lots of people. then he's allowed to keep them. Because the owner has use of it. Later on in the perek, we're going to learn actually that the distinction. Are we talking about a place where it is all Jews, or are we talking about maybe a shoulder based medrash that has a goyish caretaker or something, and therefore the person is going to be miyash because he figures that guy or some other goy who comes over there is going to take it. Tosfos points out, by the way, why didn't the Gemara just ask from the Mishnah, from our Mishnah, where it says Moses Mechuzaris, why bring the Braisa instead? It's always better to ask from a Mishnah than a Braisa. And the answer is because Reb Yitzchok, when he says Adam Osi Lamash Mishpakisoi, why didn't he mention that in connection with our Mishnah? The Gemara had said before, Hid Omer Reb Yitzchok, as Reb Yitzchok says, in connection with the Braisa, so we can apply it to the Mishnah. Why didn't he say it to begin with on the Mishnah? And the answer is because the Mishnah is saying that the Mishnah just mentions generically Moris Mefuzaris, but the Braisa says very clearly that no matter what, Harei the Shaloi, even though there may be a certain simon on them. So therefore, so the Braisa in that sense is stronger because it's saying, in other words, even if there is, because Rabbi Mitzuri and Shum, and therefore the simon is easily going to get stepped on and kicked around and whatever the Gemara is going to talk about later on. So therefore, so that's the Chiddush, and therefore the Braisa is the better one to ask from on Abaya and is the better one for Rabbi Yitzchak to bring his din.
The
Braisa is specifying that even when there's a certain degree of a simon on it, but it's a place where Rabbi Mitzuri and Shum, and therefore, So v'hola yadud nafal minei. So he doesn't know. He dropped the coins. And here the answer is, Amar Reb Yitzchok, Adam Osir, Mash Mish Pekisim, V'chol Shah, a person feels around in his pocket at every moment to see where his coins are. And as soon as he lost them, he's going to be miyash. Toshma, the Gemara says, let's try to bring another proof. A Mishnah says in Peah, Me'ema cycle, Adam returning Beleket. From what point in the season is everybody allowed to take the remaining Leket and also Peah and Shikha and so forth that's in the field? Mishiyelchubah and Namoshis. Once the Namoshis go through the field, we mentioned this also in the previous Perek on Dafyud Beis, we mentioned this. Va'amrinan, and we explain, my Namoshis. It means old people who walk with a cane. So the other Aniyim figure, once even those old people with the canes have walked through, they'll have found everything because they're walking slow, so they'll notice anything. And at this point, the Aniyim are going to figure there's probably nothing left for us. So now at this point, it's Hefker, it's Yid, they were Miyash, and anybody can take it. That's the second explanation. Rish Lakish Amar Lakuti, Basa Lakuti, Rish Lakish says Namoshis means one group of gatherers after another. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, Namoshis means Meloshin Lo Yamushu, because they move slowly. The word yamush then means to move. According to the Shlokish, it's Meloshin Yomish, that they move everything from before them. They find and they pick up everything that's in front of them, and therefore, so once you have two groups like that have come through, then the rest of the Aniyim are Miyash. So the question is, how, Vamai, Nihi Daniyim Dahocha Miyashi, fine, granted that the Aniyim here in town are Miyash, once they realize the old people or the second group of Malachtim have gone through. What about the Aniyim in other places? They don't have Yush necessarily. They don't know that the old people, that the Nemoshis or whatever have gone through. And according to Abaya, that shouldn't work because Yush Shalevi Das is not Yush. When they find out, then they'll be Miyash, but they haven't found out yet. So according to Abaya, how would that Mishnah work? And the answer is Amri, no. Kivin to Ika Aniyim Hocha. On the contrary, since there are Aniyim here in town, Hanach, the Aniyim out of town, Meikra Yush Miyash, they're Miyash even to begin with. They figure we don't even have a chance at it in the first place. For Ami, they figure Aniyim Dehosim Malak Dilei. The Aniyim who live in that town are going to collect everything there is. So we may not even bother, and therefore they're not even going to. Therefore they're miyayish of it even to begin with when the harvest season begins. So therefore we don't have to pay any attention to what they're going to think about it, and we only have to focus on the Aniyim here in town. And once the Aniyim here in town are miyayish because of the Nemoshis, then yeah. Actually, Gilead HaShastra, Akiva Eger, points out that still you have to wonder that the Aniyim Ketanim, as the Gemara is going to say at the end of the Sugya, the Aniyim in town who are Ketanim are not able to have valid Yush, and they have a right to Leket Shikha and Peah. So why shouldn't we say that because of them, you can't take it yet? So he leaves it Tzarechi.
You don't have little kids going to get...
You could have little kids going and collecting Leket Shikha and Peah. So yeah, he leaves it Tzarechi.
Usually
the parents would, but nevertheless, the kids might do it also. All right, so we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with more of this discussion of Abaya and Rabbah.